You are listening to KKRN Radio 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. This is Examine Life. I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Welcome to our show. Tonight we're going to talk about farming, modern farming, and the pros and cons of the kind of farming we're doing today, and foods and what foods are healthy, and other subjects related to those.
Is there nutrition in what we eat?
Is there nutrition in what we eat?
Yes.
That's a matter for debate. I think we're going to find out tonight.
Yes. Farming has taken a big turn in recent years. The farmers increase productivity of their foods by using petroleum-based and synthetic fertilizers. And to increase their yield, they use synthetic nitrogen. All of these are inorganic. They distort carbon and microbes in the soil. And with those kinds of genetically modified seeds, they grow faster, but they don't uptake any more nutrients.
Well, we talked about two different things there. You mentioned the use of inorganic nitrogens and so on, and those have been going on for a long time. And, of course, there was a lot of screaming about it at first, and now it's kind of accepted behavior.
Yes.
But they've moved on to modifying organisms,
yes,
which is causing some new screaming.
Yes, and we'll get to that in our second segment.
I think the biggest reason they're doing all this, though, of course, the farmers want to make money. The big chemical companies want to make money. And the people in some of the third world countries want to eat.
They want more food. The world needs more food. And over the last 30 or 40 years, the genetically modifying those seeds has increased productivity so that we can now feed more and more. Every decade, we've increased the number of people that we can feed with just the farms in the United States.
And of course, being a libertarian, my belief is that if we could keep all farming and all business separated from government, then I would be less inclined to tell these companies how to farm or what to do and let the populace decide. Unfortunately, they have a lot of benefits, farming subsidies and so on, that they get from the government. So it's all intertwined now, and we can't get out of that.
Well, the government really, the Department of Agriculture really got into the helping of farmers, and they did help. The farm research that the government did really helped farming. It kind of took a turn when, in the 1930s, they started believing in plowing soil clean and had farmers do that throughout the Midwest. And that resulted in the Dust Bowl, as the topsoil was just blown into the wind from those barren farms, thousands and thousands of acres of them.
It did result in the Dust Bowl. And I think every kind of farming, and every enterprise for that matter, has positive and negative sides. And that's an example of why a government shouldn't be involved as anything, as far as I'm concerned, even in giving advice. I just don't think they should, because a lot of farmers back then would have said, well, we're just doing what they told us to do.
And before then, there was a lot of crop rotation going on, where farmers would plant beans, legumes, and peas, which would put nitrogen in the soil, and then they would, after a few years, convert to fruits and leafy greens that would pull nutrients out of the soil. And crop rotation was a staple of farmers that were not big agri-farmers.
And now what you're seeing is that kind of thing is only in people that kind of have a philosophical interest in producing quality foods from their farms, which are usually smaller farms. They're not as profitable, obviously. And so it's on a smaller scale, and it makes everything more expensive. So now you have two options. You can eat the foods that are all modified or not modified, or you can search out the real healthy, or what are said to be real healthy foods grown by organic farmers.
And farmers used to have cover crops. In fact, in the Bible, everything was on seven-year cycles. And it was said that you would harvest for 6 years and then let the land lay fallow for a year, where you would have your animals graze on it, and that fertilizer would replenish that soil. And farmers for years also did cover crops, which they called green manure, which was rye grasses or clovers or buckwheats or stuff like that, which they would cut before they flowered. but it put bacteria in the soil, suppressed weeds, controlled pests by letting that cover crop disintegrate into the soil.
So farming has become kind of a high-tech thing now. And again, I believe in free enterprise, but essentially that's what it is. These giant farming companies have tried to always maximize their profits. And so they take on these techniques to maximize the amount of food. And there is some loss of nutrients. But now that we have to feed the world, I don't know how we can avoid that.
The loss of nutrients isn't a little amount of nutrients. There have been multiple studies, Scientific America, University of Texas, where they have actually studied food from 1950 to 1999 and compared the difference. And there are definite declines in protein. Calcium's down 27% from just those few years. Vitamin A is down 21% in the same foods. Vitamin B and C is down 30%. Oranges only have 10% of the vitamin A they had then, and onions and potatoes no longer have vitamin A.
So how are people surviving then?
They're not. If you talk to any medical doctor, and I just recently talked to a cardiologist that was saying that Americans have a terrible lack of magnesium, boron, zinc, these, and vitamin D. He said, even though we have foods that are fortified, like milk with vitamin D, we are still lacking it in our bodies because we're not consuming the right amount of foods that give us high amounts of those, like organic vegetables. We're consuming too many foods that are either processed or genetically modified to where there's a depletion because the ground they're grown in doesn't have any nutrients in it, the soil.
Well, even though some of the nutrients are missing, and to whatever degree they're missing, if you look around, people are eating the wrong kind of foods that even if the right kind of foods had those nutrients, the people won't get them. They're eating the chips, they're eating top ramen, they're eating hamburgers and french fries.
But if you're trying to eat right, and in 1992, the Department of Agriculture knew that there's an 85% loss of minerals in the soil. That means the plant can't take them up, so we can't get them.
Well, kids used to get rickets, they used to get scurvy, they used to get all these malnutrition diseases. In spite of what you're saying about the doctors, I'm not seeing epidemics of these diseases.
It's not an epidemic of those kinds of diseases. It's more in all of these other milder deficiencies that are causing intestinal problems, stomach problems, diarrhea, some of the other diseases that are caused by inflammation because of the genetically modified food we're using rather than basic organic foods.
And I'll just have to disagree because I think they're picking the wrong kind of foods. I see what people eat. I go out in the community and I see what people buy. And as I told you on a discussion before, when I go shopping, I come out of the store and I have all this kale and lettuce and tomatoes and carrots. And what I see other people buying is booze and potato chips. And I mean people with their kids. And frozen potatoes and frozen meat and desserts. So I don't know how a physician can say that it's the foods that are causing this when the people are not even picking the foods that should be healthy, even though they might be depleted in nutrients.
And I agree, and obesity is a result of a lot of that. But if I go into a store and I buy food that appears to be food, like soybeans, for example, because I like edamame. And in the package, all I see are little green beans. I expect that to be food that's nutritious to me. And I'm finding that's not true.
Because they're grown with lower nutrients.
That, and there's other things in that soy that wasn't there 50 or 60 years ago that is not even plant. It's not even food.
So what's the solution to that?
Organic farming, I guess, or growing my own garden. It can be, I can compost. I can, even if it's a pot that has a tomato, they now make hybridized tomatoes that grow in pots rather than have to have a lot of ground. You can grow over the summer. You can grow a lot of things that will fortify your nutrients to carry you over the winter. Your body will store a lot of minerals and nutrients, not all of them, but a lot of them, that will help you through the winter when those fruits and vegetables are not available.
Well, that's a good libertarian response. That's what I would like to see, is people taking responsibility for their own food. I think we live too far from the earth.
And from food where it's grown.
Right. I've actually heard people, I remember an old joke I read once where these two guys from New York were out hunting, and one of them said, "Look at those deer. They're all just standing around." And so he shot and killed the farmer's cow. Because they have no idea where food comes from. And there are literally people in some cities who don't truly believe that milk comes from cows.
And I understand that. But if you are concerned about your food, which many Americans are, you can buy organic. You can participate in that parking lot farm co-op that a lot of neighborhoods have during the spring and summertime. And your body will store a lot of those nutrients that you consume during the summertime from those good sources of food.
Well, that's true. And I think that's the kind of response I'm looking for. Is, you know, I earlier when we were discussing this off the air, I mentioned that, you know, in the city, you can only grow so much on your balcony. But in fact, if you look at Detroit, the destruction of Detroit, some people are actually taking some of these houses that have been abandoned, clearing all the lumber and trash off the property and growing food.
Right.
And so that's the approach I would like to see. Rather than see the government dictate something, I would like to see people taking more responsibility for their own foods. And of course, their first response is, well, I work long hours, but if I had a complete list of all of your activities for the day, I think there's a couple of things you could give up to do some of that food growing.
And composting is not that difficult to do either. I do it every year, and it's basically think of it as a layering process where you have green and browns that you layer, and that all the stuff that comes out of your kitchen, anything but fats, meats, or bone, those eggshells, those coffee grounds, those two tea bags, those scrapings off the plate of mashed potatoes, they can all go in a compost pile. And that compost pile can be a drum that you can rotate and add water to. And it's a layering process that allows the good bacteria, the biologically active soils, which decomposes that stuff, creates good bacteria, and that becomes good soil in the spring. So if you start now with your leaves and those scraps, and you might know somebody that has chickens or a cow or a horse, and you can incorporate some of that dry manure into that compost pile and layer that with those leaves that you're raking out of the yard and the table scraps. Once the rains come and they get wet, then you go out and shovel it and turn it so that the air can break it down and the microorganisms can start working.
Well, I agree. And nowadays, a lot of cities are allowing people to have chickens, even in the city. And frankly, my chickens, I let them into my garden. I just screen the plants so the chickens can't get to the actual garden vegetables. But they spend all season long fertilizing and digging up the dirt around it. And then the next spring, when I plow it all up, I mix all that in. So it's kind of like rotating or replenishing the soil every year.
And if you don't have or want to do the composting idea, there's soil soup, and there's a lot of local garden centers that carry it in the spring. And it's a type of fertilizer that you can put on that tomato that you're trying to grow in a pot. You can put it on flowers. You can put it on, if you have a citrus tree in a pot or the one tree in your backyard, whatever fruit or citrus or whatever it is that is grows, you can put that soil soup, which has all those alive microscopic organisms that give that plant nutrition to thrive.
And I had a little note here that, you know, it sounds good, and it probably is, but it's really a concentration of nutrients that somebody has to produce because it takes a lot more worms than you'll find in your yard. And so it offsets some of these ideas about all pesticides and all modern chemical treatments being bad. I mean, if you look at some of the animal repellents that you find in the store, you'll see that some of them are nothing but pure concentrate of blueberry. And so it's the worm casting doesn't seem very natural to me. But on the other hand, I guess if it only contains worm castings and so on, it should be harmless.
Where soil soup is made up of organic worm casings and worm compost. That means stuff that they put in the worm farm that the worms break down. And during the process of brewing that soup, the beneficial microorganisms are increased like 25,000 times to benefit the soup, the liquid. And they're very active organisms. It's a kind of like a brew that you dilute. You buy it in a little container, and you usually have to use it within 48 hours or something because it is a liquid concentration, and it will die because it's living organisms.
And it's all in water, so it's not, isn't it? It's all a liquid, or
yes, it's a soup.
So you'd have to be careful, as you said, with the time.
Yes. Dr. Linus Pauling proved that organic minerals normally have very small molecules easily absorbed through your cell walls. And these minerals work as activators that set off chemical and enzymatic reactions in our bodies. And those minerals are in those soil soups, those bacteria that break down that compost pile, that is a concentration of minerals. And magnesium activates 300 enzymes in our body that generate energy. Calcium is essential for formation of blood clots and nerve impulses and heart rhythm. These are things that are in good soil, and the plant absorbs them, and then you eat the plant and you get them.
Now, when we get to organic foods, organic foods don't really solve this problem.
What problem?
The problem we're talking about right now. Because organic foods are very simply foods that just don't have certain things in them. It doesn't mention anything about nutrition in organic foods.
But organic foods have to be grown in soil that has been 3 years from having any type of contamination or anything like that on that soil. So that
right. No contamination, but it doesn't say they have to have certain levels of nutrients.
No, nothing is tested. The FDA does not test anything for nutrient content. Even the fruit you buy in the market is only for size, shape, color. And FDA only says that it doesn't have to be harmful on the day you eat it. So if you eat it today and you get sick tomorrow, that's okay. FDA says fine. That's a response of your body.
And I guess my point for bringing that up is just that, you know, it may make you feel all warm and fuzzy to buy organic foods, but you really need to do more homework than that, because organic foods are very narrowly defined, and it's more about what they don't contain than what they do. So if you buy an organic kale, it doesn't mean that all the nutrients that should be in that kale are in there. It just means that there are certain chemicals that someone considered dangerous are not in there.
No, it does mean that it's nutritious, because it has to be grown in soil that is chemical-free. It's got to be free of growth hormone. It has to be free of pesticides or chemical fertilizers. It's food that cannot have been irradiated. It can have no GMOs in it. It can have no sewage sludge. It has to be grown on what they consider virgin soil, which is 3 years of none of these things contaminating that soil. Most organic farmers either compost or they have organic matter turned into the soil, because there's too much work involved to do it just to make a nickel more for the pound of potatoes you're selling.
You say most organic farmers, but that's a non-statement. That doesn't mean anything to me, because, again, they can let that soil lay there fallow, but if nothing's growing on it that will replenish this soil that has all these reduced nutrients that you're talking about, again, what I'm saying is that when you buy organic food, you can talk about what they should do and what they do, what you think they do, but the definition of organic foods contains nothing about having enough calcium, enough of anything. It just says that the soil, put simply, The item have ingredients lists, and the content should be 95% or more certified organic, meaning free of synthetic additives like pesticides, chemical fertilizers, and dyes, and must not be processed using industrial solvents or radiation or genetic engineering. The remaining 5% may only be foods or processed with additives on an approved list. There's nothing in there about they need to have enough calcium, they need to have enough magnesium, they need to have enough vitamin D. None of that's in organic foods.
None of our food is tested for any of that.
Right. Well, all I'm saying is, I'm not saying we don't need that. I'm saying just be careful. Just buying something organic doesn't guarantee you anything but that there are some chemicals that are not in there. It
right.
doesn't say that it's nutritious, that it has any specific amount of the things that you need or should be getting from that food.
Right.
I'm just, again, governments have a way of labeling things that often don't really give you any security that you think it's giving you.
True. Even if you buy organic eggs, they're only to be from hens that are cage-free and free-range, which means they're allowed outside. But that doesn't mean that they're not supplemented with bugs. Yeah, most chickens like bugs and worms, and if they scratch in the dirt, which means free-range or out of a cage, that they're going to pick up those kind of bugs, and the bugs, they turn to nutrition, and they put it in their eggs.
Oh, my chickens love bugs.
Yes, they do.
They get so excited. I grow my own mealworms, and they can tell when I have mealworms before I put them on the ground. They know.
And it's good for them. It's, you know, like I say, they're creating a food that you're inevitably going to eat. I feed my chickens flaxseed and spinach and any other kind of greens, because I'm going to turn around and eat those eggs, and I want them to be as nutritious as possible.
We're going to be taking a break pretty soon, so talk a little bit about biodynamic farming.
Biodynamic farming is what they're considered holistic. It's not really organic. It's a holistic approach as a biosphere-type farming, which is living organisms, including earth, water, air, and fire. And it's about healing the soil, using the composting of cow manure, eggshell supplementation, where you smash up your eggshells and turn those back in the soil. It promotes the enzymes in the soil so that the soil pH is at 6.5. A lot of it also has to do with when you plant, like the Aztecs and the Incas, when, depending on the moon or the season, is when you planted food or you harvested food. And that's what biodynamic farming is about, is gaining every speck of energy that the universe creates to get into your food.
And the American Indians used to also do something called the Three Sisters farming, which I tried last year. Unfortunately, the ground squirrels didn't agree that I should eat as much as they do. But the idea is, and I like the idea, they grew their corn in circles rather than rows. And they would put a climbing bean. First, they would plant the corn and let that grow to a certain height. Then they would add a climbing bean. And the climbing bean would use the corn for a vine holder. And the beans would put the nitrogen back in the soil. And then the third sister was Blue Hubbard or some other squash that's the broad leaves covered the ground to help prevent weeds, which I don't see that works. But it was a great idea, and it was a lot of fun trying that this year.
And if you think about it, if you just cut off the fruit and you leave that plant, you start creating a compost pile. You're creating a humus-rich material that through oxidation of the carbon by bacteria and fungus, which is the nitrogen, for protein synthesis. So the layering of just that dying leaf on your squash is the nitrogen-rich green portion of the compost pile. Any kind of fruit, vegetable scraps, eggshells, those are all the green layers. And then you add a carbon-rich brown layer, which are dried leaves, your grass mowings, straw, shredded paper you can even put on there, as long as it's not colored paper. And then the rain comes, and you turn the pile occasionally, once a month, to aerate it and promote that. And you're actually creating living matter for your plants to grow in next year, or your flowers. It doesn't have to be vegetables. You can grow flowers in it, too.
Yeah, just about anything. I'm one of those who feeds all of the vegetable garbage I have to my chickens. And you throw that out in the garden, and they, I don't really, I, the mulch piles I have are mainly made up of hay and things from the sheep and so on. But the rest of it I throw in the garden, and the chickens mulch it. They yes. dig at it, whether it's something you want to eat or not. They dig at it. They move it around. They eat what they want to eat. They poop on it. They are just great at producing really fertile soil.
In any plant you plant, I can remember being told by this little old lady that, you know, if you don't have anything else to put in that hole when you dig the hole to put that plant in it, take a big scoop of dog food and throw in there, or a fish, you know, the fish bones from the night before, throw it in that hole, because that matter will decompose and feed that plant.
Yeah, just about anything will. I know you mentioned before not putting
meat.
Like most animal bones and meats and certain kinds of fat in there. So that was kind of a discussion about farming. I think it's probably time to take a break. We're almost at the bottom of the hour. And on our next segment, we want to talk about genetically modified organisms.
And genetically modified foods and the benefits and the not-so-good benefits.
Yep. So you're listening to Examine Life on KKRN. Bella Vista in Round Mountain. Pat and I are going to take a little break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
We're going to discuss genetically modified foods now, and there are a number of different kinds of those. GM is genetically modified. GMOs means genetically modified organism that has new traits other than the organisms that we originally had. There's also genetically engineered, which is manually adding new DNA to an organism. They call that that new trait. It gets a new trait from that, and that's transgenic. But there's even something called PIPs, which are plants with insecticidal properties, and there are now 41 of them out there. And these are all in our food chain.
So some discussions we've had are about whether genetically modified organisms are good or bad, and we kind of need to define terms a little bit. You were saying earlier that GMOs for decades have been good, but I think that's more hybridizing than GMOs. And you were talking, you have been talking specifically about injecting DNA from other phylums of organisms into plant material.
Well, beneficial hybridization came around in the 1950s and 60s. That's how we got grapefruit that got really red. The first pink grapefruit was a mutant in 1907 on a tree in Florida. And then they cloned it, and then they wind up thermal radiating it in 1968, which made it really red. So they genetically modified that. Rice feeds half the world, and we genetically modify that now. We cross it with maize, which is also a food product, and it helps prevent blindness. By maize has part of its genetic makeup. It makes vitamin A, or the beta carotene that creates vitamin A.
Even with depleted soil?
Yes, it's called golden rice. And it's a good thing.
Interesting.
Okay? But rice doesn't have a lot of nutrition in it anyway. But anyway, back to that. And those were both considered grasses, maize and rice. And it required the moving of four genes between these two plants, which is what they call hybridizing, or breeding new types of plants.
So that was actually intracellular manipulation of DNA.
Yes.
It wasn't just crossbreeding plants.
Well, it says that they had to move four genes from the maize to the rice and back. So it was a genetically modified food.
Okay.
But there wasn't any other foreign organism in there. In 1970s, the Institute of Plant Sciences in Switzerland decided they needed to help developing companies grow more food. And they needed to increase the yields of wheat, corn, barley, rye. And in order to do that, they decided that they needed to make them resistant to disease. And that's where we got into genetically modified organisms, where we actually inject something other than plant or food material in the DNA of the original plant.
And along those lines, we've had some discussion about labeling.
Yes. And I am a big believer that if I go to the store and I'm intending to buy food, and that's that soybean, go back to the package of edamame, and I'm going to go buy soybeans, I'm expecting that the only thing I'm getting to eat is food. But I'm not. 80% of soybeans has been genetically modified with an injection of a insecticide or a herbicide that is not a plant. It's not food.
But how do you know you're not? We're not labeling them.
80% of all soybeans are grown that way. And I want the right to decide. I don't want the ones that have been implanted with herbicide or insecticide. I want to be able to buy the ones that don't have it. And that's why we need labeling.
So who should label?
Hopefully the manufacturer.
Is that the farmer who grows the food?
If he's going to sell me the soybeans that are the original soybeans, then yes.
So it should be the grocery store then that labels it?
No, the grower, the guy who grew that bean that was genetically, he knows if he got genetically modified seed or not.
So how does he get the label to you?
On that, when he goes and sells those soybeans to whomever buys them, these are genetically modified, they should be labeled thus. Whoever packages those puts them in the package. Now, if I'm talking about a cake mix from General Mills, then I'm expecting General Mills to put that on the package.
So not the person that sells it to you, the person who sells it to them.
Who creates it.
So the farmer doesn't have to do anything. He can grow all the nasty food he wants, but he doesn't have to label it.
He needs to have the information available to whoever buys what he's selling that's genetically modified organism in his food that he's selling. Because if I buy food, I'm expecting it to be only food and that it's consumable by people.
Now, since you know that 80% of the foods have this, then
80% of soybeans.
Why should we bother labeling 80% of the foods? Why shouldn't we just label the ones that are certified not to have this?
because the ones that, like corn, for example, 80% of the corn that's grown is not grown for food. It's grown for ethanol or feed for animals. So the 10% that is grown for people, supposedly corn on the cob that you go and buy in the grocery store as a corn cob, is genetically modified, but it is grown for human consumption. So they know where that food is going, if it's going for people or if it's going for ethanol. Now, aside from that, high fructose corn syrup comes from the corn that it's a byproduct of the ethanol corn. It's not the human consumption corn. So high fructose corn syrup is a whole nother story. But if I'm going to buy corn on the cob, it frozen or the box that it comes in at the grocery store, if that has been genetically modified, that box should say on there, this is genetically modified corn. It was grown for human people to eat. We're expecting only food. That's what I want.
Well, you just said it's not grown for people to eat. It's grown to put in cars.
That's ethanol part. But the part that they grow for food, and I go to the store and buy a corn on the cob to eat, that box, if it's not just corn on the cob, and it's got the insecticide or the herbicide or the pesticide in it, implanted in its DNA, then I'm going to eat it.
But you said
I can't
80,
wash it off.
You said 80% of it has that.
That's right.
So then why not, instead of having the person who can't afford to buy organic foods and so on, why put all this cost on them, which from what I see, most people aren't even bothering looking at the labels. Why not just label the foods that can guarantee you those things aren't in there? It would make them a lot easier to find. If people want to know that that's what they're buying, they just go to that section. The label says it doesn't have any of this in it. Why make everybody label their foods? And if you're going to make everybody label their foods, why not have the organic farmer who at the Igo Farmers Market who says he grew this out of his ground but could have went down to some of the markets and took them out of the frozen package and brought them out and sent them. Why doesn't he have to label?
Why put the onus on the small farmer who is growing things naturally instead of putting it on the big agro growers who have the resources? They're the ones that modified the seed. Let them be the ones have to label.
Well, the article I read had a family farmer who said that he was doing it because he could make more money farming.
And he sold it to the big... He bought those seeds from Monsanto.
But the point is, he bought them and he sold them. But you're saying we don't want to have him go to the extra work.
Yes, we do.
So it is the small farmer.
Well, why not
the guy that claims to be organic at the
farmer's
market?
He was farming 1,000 acres. That's not a small farm. Small farm is 10 acres.
It is by some people's standards.
Well, not in my opinion. You wanted my opinion. I think that the 1,000-acre farmer who's growing 1,000 acres of corn is the small farmer. He's part of the big ag business.
How about the 800-acre farmer?
If he's buying Monsanto GMO seeds, he should label his food or notify people that what he's selling is GMO food.
Again, you don't know that the little farmer who has 500 acres, who's going to the farmer's market, because it takes a lot of land to grow anything, who's going to farmer's market and claims his food is all natural and it's out there in the bins for you, but you don't know actually where he got it. You know what he says.
But the chances of him going to Monsanto and saying, I want to pay a premium for your GMO seeds, is not likely.
Well, no. He's going to charge more because it's
organic.
Right out of the ground. So he could go down to the market and buy non-organic for less money and bring it out and sell it to you and say, it's organic. I bought it from the... I grew it out of the ground. Trust me.
Well, if he's not using genetically modified seed, then it is food, right?
So even though he bought it from somebody who might have been. Like I'm saying, I'm just saying that labeling is to make companies honest, correct?
But the farmers have to sign an agreement with Monsanto that they will not sell or reseed any excess seed. It's part of their agreement with Monsanto.
And we know everybody lives up to their agreements.
Well, you're asking them too, and so we have to assume that they are.
I think I made my point.
Okay. I'm just saying...
Who's going to do the labeling? Who's going to decide what gets labeled? Who's going to make the rules? Who's going to implement it? And an old Roman saying, who watches the watchers?
But if I'm buying food with the expectation that I can consume it as food... then you, by golly, should be only selling me food.
And my opinion is that if you trust a label to give you an expectation, then I guess you get what you deserve.
But 30% of us shoppers read labels, and we believe that what that label says is true because the government regulates labels. They don't regulate Monsanto. They don't regulate genetically modified seed. So the only hope we have of having the right to choose if we want to eat it or not is for it to have a label on it.
I don't know if that's the only hope we have. I believe the free market could do the same thing, but that's probably a discussion for another time. I just think what they say and what they do are two different things. And the government guarantees that we won't have, breakouts of E. coli, but we do. Even with the USDA doing all that they do, we still have them. But if a company gets a reputation for doing that kind of thing, they won't be in business very long.
But that's just it. The ConAgra's, or what we call the big aggregate farms, DuPont and Monsanto have monopoly on seeds. And the farmer goes to them, he buys this seed. He doesn't really know how harmful that insecticide or pesticide is to people. He's believing the studies Monsanto gives him. And we believe that Monsanto is doing the right thing. But tobacco proved that not every corporate America is doing the right thing. And I think we learned our lesson by trusting tobacco companies to disclose to us what's harmful for us. And the same thing holds true for Monsanto, DuPont, and all these other genetically modified organism seeds that they're selling, that they have a farmer sign that he's liable, not them. Now, if they're so pure, why don't they take the responsibility for that?
Why does the farmer sign it? Why doesn't he get his seeds elsewhere?
Because his yield is 3 and 4 times what it is with any other kind of seed. He's so after the dollar.
He's after the dollar just like everyone else is.
But again,
just like the politician who's going to decide what gets labeled and what it says.
I don't think the politician is involved in this yet. We haven't even got the studies to prove there's anything wrong. We're still believing the small number of studies that show that this material that they're inserting in there is harmful to us. It's damaging to human cells. Most people don't even want to believe that because we don't want to believe that corporate America would do that to us. We want to believe in their wonderfulness of only doing the right thing.
And in our politicians to get it right when they tell us to label.
It doesn't matter. As long as somebody is watching, chances are they'll do the labeling according to what the rules are. But if we don't even ask them to do it, we don't have any hope. And people, I don't have any choice.
And people like you are already doing that, and Monsanto and companies like it are already responding. They're changing their practices because people are already screaming, and the government hasn't been involved.
But they won't release their studies under secret proprietary knowledge of their company. They won't release all the statistics from their studies. Isn't that the same story we got from tobacco?
Well, and I say as long as we continue to buy products and the farmers continue to take the products from Monsanto, you can't blame just the Monsantos. If the farmers are doing it just to make more money, I don't know. I just think labeling should be restricted. If you're going to label anything, it should be people that say this food is pure and doesn't have any of these. It would cost everybody a lot less money, and I don't see how the result would be different.
You just assume
that all the other foods have it in them, and you don't buy them. And then guess what? They would start automatically labeling their foods and saying it isn't in there.
But think about it. Why should the person who is doing the right thing by selling you food that's food, why should they have the onus of labeling rather than the guy who's doing something obnoxious and is doing something that is questionable? Make him disclose, not the guy who's doing what's expected is I'm growing food and I'm selling you food.
Who you think is doing what's expected because he's telling you the food is organic and doesn't have any of this in it.
There may be one bad apple in the bushel, but that you can't throw out the whole bushel of apples because of that.
I agree. We shouldn't throw out all the farming and the GMOs because of Monsanto. You're right.
Okay, but I don't think the public is aware of how damaging these microorganisms can be. And just the idea that they're taking the main ingredient out of Roundup and putting it in our food is wrong, and they should have to label that. They should allow me the choice to say, okay, I will eat or drink or whatever that substance is that has that detrimental component to it.
Well, for a government to implement a law, I believe it has to serve the greater good. And just the fact that the fast food restaurants are required to put out the calories and all the people that eat the wrong foods are still eating all the wrong foods tells me that it doesn't serve the greater public. So I don't know that we should have such a vast ruling when only a few of the people are going to pay attention to the labels in the first place.
But it's the critical few. The Canadian study with lactating women with breast milk, and they found this very bacteria, this very pesticide in breast milk, proves that it's detrimental. We should not be making that DNA ourselves.
It proves that it gets in your DNA. I didn't see anything there about it proving actually that it was physically detrimental. However, that being said, apparently the people that do want to know do know. You know all of this, and we have not labeled them.
Because I stumbled across it.
You stumbled.
I did. I stumbled across the information about the lactating women and that they had this damaging herbicide in their milk and that it is systemically toxic, and they're creating the DNA now and they're feeding it to their children. Okay, now that child has it in his DNA. He eats something that has more of it in there, and now he's getting an accumulation of it in his body. What happens when he has children?
Well, you may have stumbled across it, but I happen to know there are lots of people who actually do the research and look for this kind of thing. I don't know how you stumbled across it without being someone who looks for those kind of things. But if you did, then that would be all that you knew about it. But you seem to know a lot more because you do your homework and you care. And I just think there are so many people who don't care. That's why I'm saying the ones who care will go to that place where they know they label the foods, which are healthy foods. The ones who don't care are going to continue to buy those foods, whether they're labeled or not.
But think, I stumbled across this information, and now every pregnant woman I talk to, I tell them, you know, you need to pay attention to what you're eating because this can affect you. Now, she's going to become, mothers are more concerned, I think, than anybody, because we are protective of our children. And so we do pay attention more to labels probably than anybody, because we have children and we want to protect them. And the only way to do that now is to have to read those labels. If it's not on the label, then I can't make an intelligent choice to protect my child. That's all I'm asking, is you put it on the label.
And that's a lot more than just that's all I'm asking. So let's move on to healthy foods.
But after the break, are we time for a break?
No, I think okay. We can continue on. We only have a few minutes left.
Okay, I want to touch a little bit on gluten. Gluten is one of the things that has been dramatically affected by genetic modification. And it's not with an organism that was a non-plant organism or herbicide or pesticide. It's the fact that gluten, in the 1950s, 6% of the wheat was made up of gluten. Today, because of genetic modification, 50% of the wheat is gluten, and our bodies cannot tolerate that amount of gluten. They started modifying wheat to take the fiber, to make it less fibrous, because it was gumming up the combines and the threshers, and then they decided they were going to shorten the wheat so that it wasn't so tall. And all of these genetic modifications resulted in higher gluten content of that wheat. It did, you know, give higher yields, more production, all those other things that it wanted. It took out some of the fiber out of wheat. But the problem is gluten is made up of 70 long chain proteins. And our body, when we try and digest it, it doesn't happen. And that increase makes it intolerable to our intestines and our gut lining. It is a sticky adhesive. It's in a lot of things. It's what makes bread rise more with less flour. It's a stabilizing agent and a thickener. So a lot of soups, sauces, even lipstick has it in. So you have to be concerned, even if you're not a celiac disease patient, the propensity of you having a sensitivity to this onslaught of gluten is very high. 30% of the population, they believe, has some sensitivity to gluten.
Who are they?
30% of the population.
They believe. Who are they?
The medical people.
The medical people.
Yes, and the researchers.
Well, the good news for the overweight people is that it's carbohydrates that causes a lot of them to be overweight, and gluten's a protein. So if the breads are 50% gluten, good news for them.
Not really.
They're getting fewer carbs.
Not really, because gluten prevents the absorption of vitamins and minerals, and it also causes you to be leptin resistant. And leptin is what tells your brain to stop eating. And ghrelin, which it promotes, is what tells you, keep eating, I'm hungry. So it also, gluten has a brain receptor that's very similar to morphine. It is a pleasure sensor, and it makes you want more of it. So the more you have gluten, the more you want to eat gluten.
So you know what a good solution to that is, and one I tell people about all the time? Stop eating flour products altogether.
Wheat, yes.
So you don't need to worry about gluten.
That's right.
Stop eating food that you know will make you gain weight and is not good for you.
And it is in wheat, barley, rye, pasta, because pasta is made with durum wheat. All of these products have this increasing amount of gluten, and they know that it attaches to these brain receptors, which are constantly making you eat. So you're fighting a losing battle. It's like being addicted.
And I completely agree with that. My personal history was some pretty morbid obesity way back when. And probably the biggest thing that made a difference in that was eating a lot fewer wheat-based or carbohydrate-based products than I used to eat. It's like the Mediterranean diet is somewhat similar to that. But the advice I can give is, again, those foods do produce stimulation in your pleasure center, but you're a human being, so you don't have to give in to that, and you can quit eating those foods. If you continue to eat them, these are the consequences.
And it also affects the nutritional value of wheat, because the 50% gluten displaces the nutrients in that wheat, and so you're getting less and less nutrients.
And of course, the offset to this discussion is that people in some of the third world countries, these foods provide calories which keep them alive. So we're always kind of walking a fine line when we talk about things like this. You know, even if it has more gluten, it does have a lot of nutrients.
Well, it has more than maybe no food at all. But we who here in the United States who have an abundance of food, we need to be more selective on what we eat. That gluten is an inflammation-causing mechanism, and inflammation affects all of your organs. It affects your brain. They're now linking gluten with a lot of Alzheimer's and brain disorders that are caused by inflammation of those individual nerve cells in the brain or brain tissue itself. And anything that causes inflammation, which gluten is one of the number one inflammation-causing agents, we need to kind of restrict from our diet.
So I just think we personally, if we pay attention to what we're eating, we can avoid a lot of these pitfalls. But I just don't believe most people will do that. Most people do not care. And they won't bother to read labels. They won't look at these foods. The bread tastes good. It makes them feel good. So they eat it. The French fries make them feel good. So they eat it. And they say, oh, I can't help it. My doctor told me it's an illness.
But I think that's a very small sliver of society. A lot of people don't have the knowledge. They don't know. And they don't think I have to go and look up everything I eat on the internet. They assume the food they get is good food. And I think it's unfair to just say you're just too lazy to go look it up. I think most people assume the food they're eating is good for them. Especially, you know, for years we went to McDonald's and got a salad not realizing that they washed it in sugar.
Well, I don't know. I will have to disagree on that. I talk to a lot of people. I'm in a healthcare environment. I talk to people about diet and exercise every day, and they don't bother. They don't bother to look. Sometimes I don't have time to bother to look, or I can't afford it. They don't bother.
But do you think people really look and see that that's one slice of wheat bread is 71 on the glycemic index? No. The index only goes to 100.
I can't help that. The information is there for them.
If they're diabetic, they probably pay attention. But most of us assume the food that we buy that is we expect to be good for us, like wheat, we expect to be good because it's supposed to be high fiber and beneficial to us. And we're finding out it's not.
So instead of telling people to, telling the government to intervene and create labels and do all these things, we need to tell people to spend more time educating themselves, because that's the only way they'll solve the problem. We need to educate people, or we need to hold them responsible for their behavior. You know, they modified the school diets, and what happened? The kids stopped eating the food, or they brought in food that wasn't nutritious and the food went to waste. You have to change behaviors. Enforcing a law doesn't get it done.
Well, I don't think we need to have a law about, you know, the gluten content of wheat, but I think the point of the conversation is to bring to light some of the unsuspecting modifications that are happening to those seeds and to the food that are affecting our actual food supply that we assume is good for us.
Well, you know what assume does.
I know. We have to start somewhere, though.
Yeah, this has been an enjoyable program. I think I brought in some politics to it, but it's because they're so deeply embedded in everything we do today that I'm frustrated and don't want any new laws, because the ones we have are tearing us down.
Well, again, it's a matter of paying attention to what we do every day, examine our life.
Yeah.
And that's what this show is, examine
life. Examine your life deeply and take responsibility for it. Take responsibility for your own life, your own nutrition, your own habits.
And we're going to go to a break right now.
This is the end of our show. This is Examine Life on KKRN 88.5, around Bella Vista and Round Mountain. I hope you've enjoyed our show tonight, Examine Life, and we'll be with you again in a couple of Mondays.
This is Dee from Bernie, and you're listening to KKRN Bella Vista, located in Round Mountain, 88.5 FM.
Programming on KKRN is supported in part by listeners like you and Mountain Valley's health centers, serving the Intermountain communities by providing primary care. Appointments can be made in Bernie at 335-5457, in Fall River at 336-6535, or in Big Valley at 294-5241. Medi-Cal, Medicare, and private insurance are all accepted.